the 9 Wikipedia page, so I clicked through to the Elijah Wood Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
Do you know what's at the top of Elijah Wood's Wikipedia page?
No.
This article is about the actor. For the murderer, see Elijah Wood, murderer.
That's rough. You hate that. 1913? Why? No one's looking for that man.
Welcome to Direct-to-Video. VHS?
VHS.
You hit that high note really weird.
Yeah, I didn't mean to. It scared me, which is why I brought it back down.
A podcast where we pair movies like fine wine. On the podcast, The Flophouse, they said the word cinemalier, and I got so mad about it.
Oh my god. God damn it.
But this week we did watch The Great Mouse Detective.
Yes, yeah. The Great Mouse Detective, which has a lot of history that I don't want to go into all of it. Because it's one of those movies that, came out right when, the first time they were going to shut down the animated features section of Disney. Because, mm-hmm. The Black Cauldron had just failed, right?
That was nobody's fault but the Black Cauldron. That should not have been the movie they made.
It's true. It really shouldn't have. And everybody knew that it wasn't going to do well. Was like, it's not going to happen for us. So this movie was basically Ron Clements and I think David Michener's, we should just do this movie. And it's like a classic. It's talking animals.
They fucking love mice over there.
Yeah.
They can do talking mice. The talking mouse movies work.
And to be fair, the first time they pitched this movie, the reason they were told no is The Rescuers just came out.
Yeah. And you know what? Fair. But if you need to pull somebody's feet out of the fire, a whole company's feet out of the fire, maybe you do a talking mouse who's also Sherlock Holmes. And who honestly is one of the best versions of Sherlock Holmes in that they really are able to give a good read on his inability to connect with other people.
It's so good. But in the middle of development, we get a changing of the guard. Michael Eisner comes in.
Dun, dun, dun.
Genuinely a person who, if you're every Disney file waits for the drop of Michael Eisner in any YouTube video you watch.
And then
brings in Jeffrey Katzenberg, and they're like, listen, we think this movie is gonna do good, but you gotta do it for $10 million and you have to release it in a year.
Fuck off.
For real. So Roy Disney was like, all right, we need to get the finishers in here. He got everybody he could get off of the Black Cauldron, who was like a vet. He was like, you're on The Great Mouse Detective.
This probably explains why it has four directors, huh?
Yeah, yeah. John Musker, Ron Clements, because they were frequent. I believe David Michener and Bernie Madison, all of them, this was their first time directing a movie. But they were veteran animators. And so I believe they were all given separate chunks of the movie to direct so that they could be in production at the same time.
Makes sense.
And I think the only big change that happened between the initial pitch and the final green light was the little girl mouse, little Moppet.
Mm.
Olivia Flaversham was changed from a sexy femme fatale love interest to a little girl.
Okay, that kind of makes sense because there is still a sexy femme fatale love interest scene that means nothing to the movie and has no reason to be in there. And if that was adapted from a scene they had earlier, that would make more sense.
Here's the thing is I don't think it was.
Fuck off!
I think that they basically turned the woman who comes in at the end of the movie. Like she was supposed to be the protect.
Gonna be her story, but now yeah, it's not. It's Olivia. She's adorable and so Scottish.
The cutest little girl. Again, you gotta. The cutest little mouse with the most adorable Scottish accent, just wandering around. So yeah, this movie was made with on a budget of $14 million, which is kind of insane. And it did well. It did so well that it, you know, it, like many other movies of its type, saved Disney again.
Disney's like fucking Christmas, the amount of times they need saving.
Right, so for real. They're like a local barn.
Save our local bar. It's also a multi-billion dollar company.
Yeah, right. So, and obviously, right, like Ron Clements and John Musker go on to be the head of Disney Animation for, you know, the strongest run of Disney animated features, I think, in their history, you know, with Little Mermaid, Aladdin,
Beauty and the Beast, Pocahontas, all of it.
Yeah. Lion King, right? Ending with, of course, Treasure Planet, which they were both just refused to let go for some reason.
They were like, God, we're so horny for Treasure Planet. It's going to be so good, guys. It's going to be the best movie ever.
We're going to design a robot that people hate. They said it was impossible.
I have a feeling they kind of dreamed up those shit designs and didn't realize they had nothing to go with it. But to talk about another movie, Great Mouse Detective.
Yeah, let's get into it.
So we see this little girl, Olivia, and her dad, and they're both, they live? Okay.
Yes.
This movie is better than Five Will Goes West, or the Five
American Tale.
American Tale, yeah. Mm-hmm. With the idea that mice have a culture and humans have a culture and they don't technically interact with each other, but they're like kind of parasiting off of it. This movie does that a lot in a way that passes a squint test more, but this fucking mouse still has a toy shop that has like a sign and a tiny little window pointed out to the street.
It's a world where every human being has like a mouselganger.
Yeah, it's kind of what it is.
And in American Tale, they're trying really hard to be like, this is like how mice secretly live. And it breaks the movie in a couple places. But here they're like, nah, they just have little shop windows and shit. No one cares.
This toy maker gives this little girl a doll. It's a dancing doll. Mr. Flaversham. It's a little upsetting.
It is a little upsetting.
So smooth. And you kind of... I've seen this movie before, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of thought, I was watching this, I was like, ah, this is just set up that he can make these really, like, smooth, realistic-looking robotics.
Yeah, right?
And, like, theoretically, right?
Maybe he just wasn't given enough time.
Maybe. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But then a fucking bat with a peg leg bursts in, and the little girl hides, and her dad is kidnapped, and she's screaming, I forget if she screams daddy or papa, but she's screaming it, and then we get the most discordant title sequence that I've maybe ever seen.
It's truly like, oh, you're in a kid's movie, by the way. Like, it feels so weird.
She's like, Papa, Papa. And then we get this like rising music. The Great Mouse Detective.
And it's like almost Indiana Jones-esque adventure music as well.
It's very good. This movie, funny. If it has a fault, it has like a weird tone issue.
Well, I do think it's a movie that is like forgets in moments of heightened intensity that this is a movie for children.
Uh-huh.
But
because
I think
there's a lot of violence, implied violence, and talking about murder.
A dude gets murdered in this. Two dudes get murdered.
Yeah.
Three dudes get murdered. Sorry, I'm like remembering all the people who died.
There is a high body count in this movie, and the deaths themselves are, at least one of them, is shockingly upsetting. It's like they saw what Captain Hook did and thought, like, how can I make this really scare kids?
No, yeah. Like, let's really go for it. It's tragic, actually, like, the way it plays out. So we get an introduction to Dawson, who is our Watson.
Let me pump the brakes immediately.
Yeah.
I gotta talk about this. It's absurd and upsetting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes.
Dawson has the same backstory as Watson, right?
What was this mouse doing in Afghanistan? In Afghanistan.
It went to war in Afghanistan against who served in the
Queen's army. He was doing mouse colonialism.
The only difference between him and Watson is that he doesn't appear to have gotten wounded at all.
Yeah, he seemed fine. If anything, he gained a bit of weight.
He's such a big guy for having just gotten back from Afghanistan.
What was his
job?
Well, he was a doctor.
Yeah, but was he a doctor of bonbons? How did this happen?
And so there's a moment in this movie where I was like, are they talking about, like, the real queen, or is there a mouse queen?
An excellent question.
It took me a shockingly long time to realize that, like, no, there is also a separate mouse queen.
It would be, this movie would not be able to manage it, but it would be fascinating if a rat professor was trying to coo the queen. The human queen, Victoria, presumably. They only call her the queen, I feel like.
The queen, yeah.
So this mouse went to war in Afghanistan, and I just wanted to mention it. I feel like we could very easily get into, like, Beauty and the Beast level, like, theories about how this world works, but we should probably pump the brakes on it a little bit and not.
We're gonna do it.
Yeah, there's one other thing I gotta talk about, but not
yet. 110%.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Dawson, who is our Watson, it's gonna be so hard not to refer to them as Sherlock and Watson, but we're gonna do it. So Dawson shows up and he's like, well, I just got back. He got a voiceover segment. He's like, got back from Afghanistan, looking for a place to live. And then as he's wandering around, he sees the most orphan child.
The most orphan child. I want to say this about Dawson too, though. Unlike Watson, he does not appear to have any fucking plan about where he's going to live after he gets back from Afghanistan. He essentially gets off of a cab, which is just like the footrest where you, like, step onto a normal cab. And he just, like, wanders down the street like he's gonna find a room for let sign and go in.
Yeah. Dude, man, history was so much better when you could just do that. When you could just show up in a city and be like, I need a place to live. And people would be like, you could live here. You don't have to fill out application forms.
God. I know, I realize you just moved into an apartment,
It's so fresh in my mind, but, like, it fucking sucks that you have to fill out an application form.
It sucks so, so bad. Like, please, please take all my money from me. Like,
yeah, like, I just let me live. Just, I'm paying you money. Let me live. So, real quick, because Dawson was voiced by Val Betton, who was the voice of Egon Pax in Gargoyles, and also the Sultan in Aladdin. This guy's just been in a million things.
Oh no, he's always bumbling.
Yeah, yeah.
So, he finds this poor little girl who's crying, and she wants to see Basil of Baker Street, the famous Basil. I'm probably going to call him Basil a lot, because that's how an American would say that.
Yeah, yeah.
I just thought I'd mention it. So they go there, they're led in by the landlady, whose name I did not get. I'm sure she has a different name in Mouse version than in...
Mrs. Judson.
Okay.
They didn't try very hard with that one.
Yeah, 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 they did not. And this is where we find out that Basil has left a lot of fire-based experiments going while he has stepped out of the house.
I do love all of these experiments, though. So he's got like a pump that's like fake smoking cigarettes to, like, see how long they burn and collecting the ash. He also has like a footprint making machine with 5 different kinds of boots. I thought this was really cute.
It's a good way to illustrate, like, these are the things that he is an expert on. He's an expert on them because he keeps testing it.
Yeah.
And I really like that, because when you first run into Sherlock Holmes, Sherlock Holmes stories, he's always like, I can tell exactly that this footprint is like this. It's like, really, Sherlock fucking how? Like, and if the idea that he has, like, a clockwork machine at home they uses, you know, probably because it keeps him off the coke for another hour.
Yeah, yeah. Dawson and Olivia, the little girl, are like just kind of hanging out, and he just bursts in a costume.
Okay, so this is, I think, the first and genuinely last time that this movie will border on possibly truly offensive.
It's just kind of like a racist, I think Chinese, like, outfit.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, how is this a disguise, Basil? Everybody's gonna be looking at you.
He's also waving a gun around like a madman.
Like a maniac. And he gives the gun to Dawson, and Dawson, a soldier, has it pointed at his face for like 4 seconds. And his own face, like, staring down the barrel. Why did you do that, man? You're a soldier.
This is why he's a soldier. Didn't bother him at all for like 3 seconds. That's how you know.
And he's kind of in a state of mania, I guess, where he's like,
because he's about to solve it.
Yeah, he's got this clue, and it's gonna finally get whoever.
I mean, it's not whoever.
Well, I wasn't gonna say who it was yet.
Yeah.
Don't even worry. We're about to come to my favorite bit of the movie. So. And he's, like, ignoring the kid, ignoring this guy who's in his house. And he's running this experiment. I forget. It's on the bullet, right? Somehow, if these bullets match up, this is gonna catch his nemesis. And it doesn't. And he immediately goes from, like, mania into depression. Like,
the deflation. The immediate deflation. He's, like, he goes from, like, yeah, like an almost murderous happiness.
Yeah.
To like the deepest pits of self-loathing. It is so good. He starts playing his violin. And he's like, I'm the worst detective ever. No one should ever hire me. I don't look for dads. I couldn't even find a dad. Go ask your mom about it.
Go ask. She's like, surely your mom knows where your dad is. She's like, no, I don't have a mom. And then he's like, he gets a whole like, ooh. Ooh. And it's like for the first time you realize, oh, he's being an asshole. But then he finds out that a peg-legged bat has kidnapped her father, and he gets excited again because now this is another trail that'll lead him toward Radigan.
Professor Radigan, the most evil mouse in all of London, nay, in all the world.
Now, Andy, I am of the opinion that when you have a nemesis, you should keep a framed picture of them over your
absolutely
fireplace. That's why I have a picture 110%. Of you over my fireplace.
Oh. I don't have a fireplace.
It's just, get a fireplace, Andy, for the pictures.
For the pictures, yeah.
It's so absurd. Why does he have that? It's not like...
It's like a bespoke portrait, too.
In another movie, this would be like a cutout from a newspaper where you can like just see Radigan like with his head turned or something, but it's not. It's like he's all dressed up and he's in a framed picture. Probably a painting. Like,
if it's a painting, and it's like, and the only thing that would have made this better is if it was signed.
I mean, thinking about it, the thing that makes the most sense is that after one of Radigan's defeats of Basil, he mailed it to him or something.
Right.
And then he put it up on his fireplace to remind him.
to keep the fire alive.
Yeah.
This reminds me so deeply of that one Kate Beaton comic strip where the two generals have lockets of each other. In one of the live action Sherlock Holmes movies with Basil Rathbone, whom Basil is named after, when he tells the story of Moriarty, it's like right after a trial where he gets away with it and he's waving the newspaper around. And that's the fact that they went from that to like, no. This bespoke portrait. Does Radigan have a Basil like
No.
No, right?
He has a doll.
Oh, right. He has a doll.
That he has, like, pins poked in, like he wanted to see if voodoo worked or something. Which feels much more like petty and almost normal because it's so weird. But like
Basil's thing
is weird because it's like so much more normal to have a picture of somebody, but you don't have a picture of somebody you hate.
And again, on the mantelpiece.
On the mantle.
And it's like the only photo he has in the entire apartment, which is also great.
Yeah, amazing.
He's explaining to Dawson how Radigan is evil, but we, the audience, get to go and see Radigan in action.
This is a great transition, too, because it zooms in on that portrait, and then the portrait just turns into the real Radigan. Excellent. Mwah, chef's kiss.
Just beautiful, an amazing thing. We get to see Mr. Flaversham, who is making a tea-serving robot,
mm-hmm.
and looks miserable.
He looks bad, and he's like, no, I won't do it, and he starts destroying the robot, and Radigan's like, I'm gonna go get your daughter and threaten to kill her. Do it.
And so he does.
He's played by Vincent Price. It's funny, he doesn't really have, even though Vincent Price was like a big guy, he doesn't really have the voice of a really big guy, but he can sell sinister so well.
it's Tim Curry has the voice of an evil person.
Uh-huh.
It's deep, it's booming, it really gets to you. Vincent Price has a really, I would describe it as like a reedy voice.
He's kind of a whisper.
Yeah, but it's terrifying. Like, he's getting into it.
And I feel like because they got Vincent Price to be Radigan, it really plays into the general, like, camp of this movie. In a way that I think that's essentially what saves it. I think that this could have been a bad movie if it had started taking itself a little more seriously.
Yeah.
And the fact that this guy is so ridiculously evil, but also the way he talks about it is he brags about how evil he is. It's like, mm-hmm. okay, I can kind of pick up what you're putting down, movie.
110%. Now it's fun. It's so good. Well, he gets like a full musical number. In a movie that is not a musical.
No, in fact, I think there are two songs in it, and both of them are sung by Radigan.
Well, there are three.
There are three.
Because one of them is sung by Melissa Manchester.
Oh my god, I forgot. We'll talk about it. So, he threatens this inventor. Inventor's gonna make whatever sinister thing. There's actually really excellent foreshadowing in this movie. We know that he needs a toy maker for something. We know it's a robot. We don't know what he's doing. And then he does this thing that I found crazy and will continue to find crazy. Mm-hmm. He has a group of mice working for him.
I love this so much.
But he turns to the bat. Gives him a list of stuff. He says, go get the costumes, the gears, the mm-hmm. weapons, and the girl. Right?
Yeah.
Something like that. And this bat has two crippled limbs.
Yes. He's got a broken wing and a peg leg.
A broken wing and a peg leg. He should not be the gopher for this team. Everybody else has four working limbs.
No, they're busy. He needs them there to light his cigar.
Okay, yes, this is true, but also, here's the thing. I cannot remember his name. Fidget. Fidget is busy. The devil works hard. Fidget works harder.
It's true. I love his voice, by the way.
Yeah, it's pretty good. He's like, if LeFou was like, I'm gonna get shit done today. Like, if Gaston couldn't put on his fucking shoes without LeFou.
This is truly, of all of the weirdo right-hand mans that villains have had in Disney, Fidget is by far the hardest working one. He kidnaps the toy maker, and he does eventually get all of the things the toy maker needs, all of the costumes that the henchman needs, and the girl, and yet still gets punished for it.
So then Radigan does what he does in his free time.
Yeah.
Which is, like, make everyone adore him.
These thugs, one, genuinely love him. Two, fear the shit out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I think everybody should have a trained audience of goons who know what to cheer, when to cheer. In a song where at one point they say that he, what is it? Drowned widows and orphans.
I also wrote this down. I missed it my first watch. What?
Yeah.
He says, like, he says that he's playing his biggest scheme ever, and it's like worse than the time he drowned widows and orphans. Now, hold up a second. One, I've watched the movie and no, it's not.
It's not. It really isn't. The drowning widows and orphans. Although, to be fair, part of his scheme is taxing widows and orphans.
This is true. But at least they're still alive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What do you get out of drowning widows and orphans, Rannigan? Christ.
Their property.
If he married the widows, maybe. Oh, God. Do you think
he's like a successful Count Olaf in my mind.
Yeah,
that's maybe. How he has all these riches in his secret lair.
He does have a lot of riches in his secret lair. Some of those might be the crown jewels.
I think he does have the crown jewels because part of the song is that he stole them. The real ones, not the small mice ones.
Which I do love because, like, he lives in the mouse world, but he fucking knows humans are out there. So he has this poor, unfortunate, drunk henchman.
Oh, man.
Who should not have pre-gamed this song.
No.
Because he's already drunk at the beginning of it, and he gets the line wrong. The line is, the world's greatest criminal mind. And he says, Rannigan, the world's greatest rat. Now, this is a really intense, good scene. However, yes. It brings up one of my really only like big quibbles with this movie, which is that Rannigan does not like to be called a rat, but he is a rat.
But he's not. He's a mouse.
Nice. Yeah, sure, right. But yeah, he's a rat 100%. But like, we don't see rats. We don't know why he would not want to be called one. If rats were in universe considered to be stupid or something, that would work for me, but it's not. In fact, the only time I feel like calling him a rat ever works is Basil calls him a common sewer rat, and at that point I was like, yeah, he called him common and told him he lives in a sewer. That one I get.
That one's rough. Yeah, maybe that's absolutely. It. Maybe that's it, right? Is Basil really hits him with it.
I think that is, but I feel like he shouldn't hate being a rat, right? I mean,
yeah.
It makes me feel kind of sad for him. I really embrace who you are, Rannigan. Your name's Rannigan.
He's ashamed of it.
He's kind of, we'll talk about it later, but he's kind of Freudian about it too.
Oh man, he looks like he's gonna have a heart attack.
He's it seems like his whole professor thing, the whole point about being as smart and clever and evil as he is to like build up this version of himself that is so different from, quote, a common rat.
A common rat. A common sewer rat.
A common sewer rat, yeah. So what he does... this poor mouse.
He feeds this mouse to a cat.
His cat. His trained cat. Which is cool as hell.
His cat. I don't remember the name of the cat.
I also don't remember the name of the cat. Here's the important thing about the cat, and it's going to be the important thing about the next character we're going to meet. Cats and dogs are just cats and dogs. Maybe slightly correct. Smarter than normal cats and dogs, but sort of like how the Muppets occasionally have a normal cat or a normal dog, like we were talking about in the last episode. This is a normal cat who rat has trained to eat mice on command.
Correct.
With a little bell.
A little bell. And she is a big cat.
He feeds her a lot, I bet.
She is introduced into this movie the same way that the T-Rex from Jurassic Park is. And it's great. Like, the camera shakes and everything.
What's great about it, what I really love about the scene, is that it pauses the song, but it doesn't stop the song. So after this guy who is he's so sauced that he doesn't even realize he's in trouble. He doesn't even realize Rannigan is mad at him.
He's still singing.
He's singing like, he sings, again, he tries to sing that Rannigan is the world's greatest rat when he just the song just stops because he's eaten. And then Rannigan makes everyone keep singing. And there's, like, a moment of silence before they, like, they go, like, sing it louder. Like, they're going really big because they're scared shitless. And sad. They're, like, sad about it.
Yeah, they just, that's a friend. They were trying, and they try to save him so hard.
Yeah, they're like, oh, he didn't mean it.
He's just that's drunk.
Slip of the tongue.
So we get all of this, and we immediately fade back to the portrait.
Oh, good shit.
At the end of the song. And Basil's like, and that's why he is the greatest criminal in all of London, if not Great Britain and the world. Sorry, not just not criminal, the most evil mouse, I believe is what he says.
Something like that, yeah. The bat shows up because he's trying to kidnap the girl. Now, you'd think that this fucking bat would be smart enough not to go to Basil's house. But he's not. Mm-hmm. This is genuinely the one mistake I feel like he makes.
Yes.
Olivia screams and they chase him, which makes him leave behind his hat. But Basil's like, aha! Now we have this hat. We can find him by, and this is not a joke, stealing Sherlock Holmes' dog.
Yeah, by taking Toby, Sherlock Holmes' dog. Which, I've always wondered, man, why doesn't Sherlock Holmes use Toby more often? Well, now we know. Well, you don't understand, Watson. As you can see, Toby's been ridden around by mice. You can tell by the footprints on his fur. So we'll have to do this on our own again. Also, Basil has not trained this dog as very well.
It's pretty good. I also think that I feel like the implication, to me at least, and I could be reading too much into it, is that this dog has been trained pretty well by somebody who looks kind of like Basil.
Yeah, somebody who looks and sounds and acts very similar to Basil.
And so the dog will listen to him occasionally.
But thankfully, we have, again, the most innocent child.
Mm-hmm.
And Toby, his heart melts at the sight of this little tiny mouse.
Toby loves this mouse immediately.
And fucking hates Dawson.
Yeah, which is wild. Dawson's a nice guy.
he can smell the military on him.
Probably. He's like, so this is the mouse who subjugates other mice, eh?
I don't trust it. It's such a weird choice, but they made it. So they get Toby on the trail. By the way, Toby, the most Disney looking dog. This dog, this exact dog, with this fur and this spot and these spots and this collar, has been in like a million Disney movies. They ride him all the way over to the toy store. The human toy store, I should say.
Yeah, the human toy store, not the mouse toy store, which is not, it's not clear if this is the toy store that the Flabberships toy store is under or if it's a different toy store. Mm-hmm. It would be kind of funny if they sent Fidget back. Just like, yeah, go back to the place you went, but this time the big one.
The big one, please.
And this toy store, it's fucked up, man.
It's terrifying.
This is a spooky-ass toy store. I would not want to be a mouse in this toy store.
And also, this toy store has so many toys that feel like they were built to mouse scale to kill them.
Yeah, absolutely. To spook or kill my... Now, there's one in particular. Poor Olivia, she's real precocious.
Yeah.
Good kid. Got a lot going for her. No survival instincts, though. What the fuck?
Zero. They're a child. They're going to live forever.
She does two crazy things. They're sneaking around, and she winds up like a band.
Like a music box.
And the music's... And it's like, kid, what do you think we're doing here?
We're sneaking around.
We're sneaking around. Now, they don't know that Fidget Array knows they're there.
Yeah, Fidget's watching them from the rafters.
So it probably wasn't as big a deal as it could have been. But... And then she does a second crazy thing, which is she hears this other toy with, like, a baby, and she fucking wanders off to go look at that.
This scene is shot like a Halloween slasher movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And she's, like, she's, like, smiling as she goes to pull the baby bonnet thing off. What does she think she's going to find? All you're going to find is a toy baby at best. Who gives a shit? Find your dad!
But what she finds is she finds Fidget, who immediately throws her in a bag.
Yep.
And we get a pretty great chase scene.
Where he set off, like, all the toys at once. and they're all gonna kill Basil and Dawson. And there's this bit where one of those creepy dolls that's eyes closed when they lie down is like toppling over onto them, and it breaks, and just its like eye and cheek are staring at Basil as it's like broken. Awful.
You don't, it's a nightmare. You hate to see it.
Yeah, and so they get away, and Basil's like, I told you to keep an eye on, I told you to watch the girl. He's like yelling, and Dawson is truly upset, and he's, what I liked about this scene was I was like, is this scene about to like fucking make this about Dawson, that he's upset, that Basil's upset with him, because I'm gonna hate that. And it's not, he's just like, holy shit, that poor girl. And I was
He's like, he's genuinely upset. Like, it was the one thing I was supposed to do was keep an eye on her, and I failed.
Yeah, and now she has been kidnapped, and who knows what's going to happen next.
And so Basil immediately is like, the most uncomfortable,
yeah,
consoling I've ever seen in an animated film or a real life film.
Yeah, Basil just like hates emotional interaction, and it's great. Genuinely, it might be the Sherlock Holmes story that has best portrayed that.
Because he's not an asshole. I mean, he is an asshole.
He's kind of an asshole, but I guess this is the other thing. It doesn't make him cool. Like, you know, yes. Like House? Like, House is kind of cool that he's so emotionally distant and such an asshole. But Basil's like, this is a problem in his life.
It makes him a worse detective.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it actively makes him bad at his job, that he's not good with people. And that's great. And so he's like trying to comfort Dawson. He's like, listen, man, it's as long as we have our brains in our skulls, which he did almost lose, we're going to find her, and we're going to make things right. And so he pulls out his little, his tiny little mouse pipe, starts thinking away. Dawson pulls out the list that Fidget left behind and starts reading from it. And immediately Basil's like, this is it. This is what we need. This is going to get us to them.
What I genuinely love about, and I think that this is something taken from the original Sherlock Holmes stories, but yes, it's something that I feel like is not used that often, is the idea that like, the words on this paper do not fucking matter to Basil. Like, no. He immediately looks at him. He's like, I wouldn't be able to figure it out all from this anyway. The handwriting's not important. All that's important is that he thinks he can get chemical traces off of the paper. Like,
so he looks at the, yeah, he's like that. Yeah. Cause he, in a very quick sentence, he's like, The ink is what matters. We're going to find out where this ink came from, and we're going to find out where this paper has been. So he titrates it, and from that is like, we need to go somewhere that is, it has a sewer outlet, a sewage outlet, is near the river, and sells like cigarettes, I think?
No, it's like Rodent's Delight or something. It's like the cheapest bourbon or something.
Yeah, the cheapest, and is near a pub.
Yeah.
And thankfully, there is only one place on the Thames that fulfills all three of these things.
That is pretty lucky, but we'll allow it.
We'll allow it. But it's still cool. Like, you're right. I have never seen this in any adaptation of Sherlock Holmes. Like, just this, like, raw clue gathering.
It's this cool idea that, like, yeah, his lack of ability to deal with emotions does hurt his detective work, but what he's good at is chemistry, and, like, mm-hmm. There's a lot you could do with that.
Yeah, yeah, it turns out that that's a pretty cool superpower if you're a detective. Yeah. They put on these disguises, and Dawson is not, he's just not equipped for this.
There was a thing that he should have told Dawson, which was, just don't say anything, go in there, just look kind of tough, just don't say anything. You're a soldier, act like you're a soldier, don't say anything.
Don't say anything. And he doesn't do that.
Instead, he's like, just do what I do, which is insane. Because he's dressed up as a different guy.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a captain. You're my crewmate.
He looks like Mr. Schmee, but with an eye patch.
I think that was intentional.
Yeah, absolutely. He fucking can't stand that his shirt doesn't fit him. Which, I have always wondered why Mr. Shmee was so okay with that.
Mr. Shmee just likes being a little tummy out. So they go into this pub, and immediately everyone in the pub is, like, looking at him.
They're basically made instantly, and Basil's like, ah, yes, the chase.
We're doing it. No one is catching on at all.
My least favorite part of this movie, probably, is that this scene exists and actually does not matter to the rest of the movie. Because it's earlier, we actually skipped a scene. We'll talk about it real quick. Olivia's captured, she's sewn to her dad, and then she's put in a bottle. And as this is happening, Radigan gets from Fidget that Basil is after them. And he almost kills Fidget, but then he's like, no, this is great, actually. So the fact that Basil is essentially immediately made at this bar doesn't matter. Radigan already knows he's here.
It kind of is only here, one, to like do kind of like a bait and switch, because this is kind of a classic Sherlock Holmes thing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think this exact thing is done in one of the games that came out.
I just kind of wish... We're about to talk about this whole scene. I kind of wish that this scene had anything to do with the rest of the movie. Instead, it kind of floats
because outside. The real reason that this scene exists is so that we can have a sexy mouse.
A sexy and, I guess I will say, explicit mouse. Pretty explicit. So, okay. First off, there is a juggling octopus. I do kind of want to know that guy's story.
What's going on with that guy? So octopus are smart enough to hang out with mice.
Apparently, I mean, they're very intelligent, so...
Sorry, one of the henchmen is a lizard also. I just to point that out.
That's true. Like, we do get the occasional non-mouse. So this scene, Basil, even though it's very clear that Dawson is not... He's not doing it. He seems like... not matching up with this disguise. Basil's the one who essentially gives him away by straight up asking after Radigan. And I don't know about you, I thought he was going to ask after Fidget.
Same.
Which, like, maybe some people would have been like, yeah, I know that bat. Because, like, who cares if somebody's asking about Fidget? But instead he's like, have you heard of Radigan? And everybody's like, oh, this fucking guy. And they go to drug him.
Which he catches.
Obviously, but Dawson doesn't, even though he's a doctor, and he is drugged, important, not poisoned, just drugged. Like, what essentially happens is he gets drunk really quick.
Yeah.
And gets drunk only for the duration of the scene. At the end of the scene, Basil will slap his face and he will be 100% back to normal, totally fine, ready to go on the next adventure.
So what was the point of the drug?
Unclear. It feels like there's no reason for it. Like, why are they adding all these complications if the complications don't matter? So the
Miss Mouse.
The octopus is replaced by a mouse who, like, does what we've seen in so many cartoons, genuinely.
It's kind of crazy how much we've seen this.
Yeah, very similar to the one dog from All Dogs Go to Heaven 2. Not too different from Jessica Rabbit. Like, here's the introduction of a femme fatale style character who the main character is going to immediately fall in love with, and they are going to probably tell them some kind of important information, right? Because it's noir style. Mm-hmm. And at first I was like, I misremembered this scene. This scene is not nearly as sexy as I had it in my head.
No, it is. So let me read to you the quote, because this one of the few times May actually stuck around for a movie. Quote, I was scared she'd be sexier, end quote. Quote, whoa, too sexy, end quote.
Because it's like, it's pretty subtle, but then she just kind of the classic...
it's a burlesque. She
cabaret,
like...
cabaret burlesque thing, yeah. Where she's just like, boom. Full new outfit, showing a lot of gams. Like
all the gams.
The gams.
No, there is no gam unshone.
It's, and the funny thing is, this is not a character. You no. think that, like, okay, this is supposed to be the scene where you get the, like, this is the overly sexy version. You're going to see the real version in a second. Nah, this is not, she's nothing. This is the end of her.
We're done.
Her thing. And the whole point is that everybody's just so horny for it. She even, one of her lines says something like, do whatever you want to me. Like, like, this is crazy.
Let me lift the mood with my attitude. Tonight's the night. What you're hoping for will come true.
This is the early stuff, right? It's yeah, like, yeah. This is normal.
Hey, fellas, I'll take off all my blues. There's nothing I won't do just for you. Let me be good to you.
Yeah, okay.
It's a killer song.
It's so weird that it's sung by a mouse.
Should not be in this movie.
In this movie, which is like... I want to double check, but like G-rated 100%, right?
Give me a second. Oh, this movie came out when there were no ratings.
All right. Then maybe that's actually how this happened.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, this movie has no, like, maybe when it got released on DVD, but I don't know how I'm going to check that.
Nah, it's not that big a deal.
On the one hand, of all of the sexy lady things that have existed in animated features, and there have been a lot, this is not the sexiest I've seen, but it's definitely the most egregious.
I feel like it's the most egregious because she's just nothing. That this is not a character that will come back later. It's not a character that's important to the story. She does yeah. not. The only reason she exists is to be in a sexy scene, which again makes this whole scene feel very weird because Basil sees Fidget and they like follow him where he's going. And it's a little bit like, why'd the rest of the scene even have to happen?
Yeah.
Because again, none of that other stuff matters. The fact that they could have had Dawson be drugged for longer, and I would have been like, well, I guess the whole point was to get him drugged. But it's not.
It's and it doesn't contribute to the mystery, right? Because like we just immediately move on. Basil, in the middle of a bar fight that starts because of Dawson's inebriated stupor, Basil just sees a secret door and is like, cool, we'll go through here. And that's it. We're done. Like, we're done with this moment.
So they do that. They go yep. up a pipe. They find Radigan's hideout. And Basil's like, yeah, we got it. We got him. And then boom. No, they didn't.
Again, this is the most humiliating. I don't think I have ever seen a character brought so low.
What I love about this movie is that they're not afraid to have their Sherlock Holmes character have a lot of flaws. And one of its flaws is that it's if he's outsmarted, he basically shuts down.
He's done. He is done.
Maybe there was something he could have thought of to not immediately fall into Radigan's trap as soon as Radigan's like, haha, it was me, I'm here. But he, as soon as he realizes Radigan knew he would be here, he's just like, that's it. He just like completely folds.
To be fair, like the guy had a huge banner that just said,
so
welcome Basil. And they get tied up and all of his goons are like throwing confetti. It's bad.
It's amazing. But what's funny is, like, Dawson's also here, and he just kind of looks, like, troubled, like, oh, no, like, I don't know how we're gonna get out of this. And then there's Basil, just, like, shut the fuck down, like.
Because he's, at first, Basil is, like, putting on a brave face.
Yeah.
Oh my god, Radigan, like, tears off his fake mustache.
So good. Oh, such a clever disguise. Rips it off. Oh, excellent.
No one would ever notice it was you. And from there, you just slowly watch him deflate from anger to just sadness. And yeah. It's rough. So they tie him up to what I could only call the most James Bond-ass fucking Rube Goldberg machine I've ever seen.
Yes. However, again, what I kind of like about it is in a James Bond movie, you're like, why would you turn on the death trap and then leave him to it? That's yes. so weird for you to do when you're trying to kill someone. But with Radigan, he basically explains that he is so obsessed with the idea of killing him that he could not let himself do it quickly.
He was like, I thought of seven different ways to kill you. And so I'm going to do all of that.
And he leaves the camera.
And remember to smile for the camera. And I recorded a 5-minute song on this record of me singing my goodbyes to you.
There is a non-zero chance I'll put the song at the end of this episode.
It's so good.
I wouldn't want to get like a copyright strike, though, is the problem. It's just so funny.
It's so long, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is like the best camp death trap.
And then he's like, listen, unfortunately, the Queen's Jubilee is happening in like 5 minutes.
Like now, like we gotta go.
Which is why the camera's here.
No. This is so important because it's one more little kick, because what he said to Basil when he first captured him was he expected him 15 minutes ago.
Oh, that's
and
right.
Then this time he's like, I would love to stay and watch this go off, but you were late.
Oh.
Fucking get him!
Got his ass. Destroyed him. And so, oh gosh, and also Olivia and her dad are there, or no, Olivia and her dad are taken as well, right? Because
no, Olivia is there, her dad is taken.
Her dad That's is what taken. Happens. Her dad is taken, yeah. So she also gets to watch.
Yeah, she's a little ball to watch her heroes die as her dad is kidnapped a second time.
God.
Olivia seems to get out of this movie with no emotional scarring, but we'll see how she is in like 7 years. The therapy bills are going to be crazy.
Dawson is like, well, we got to get out of here. Come on. Come on, Basil. Do your thing.
And Basil's like, he outsmarted me. What can... And Dawson gets fucking mad at him.
He's like, if you're going to just give up, you might as well just... We might as well just set off the mousetrap and die right now.
And then in the best, like, manic realization, he's like, yes, we'll set it off right now. And Dawson's like, what? Excuse me?
Wait, no. Hold on.
And the plan, so this a really overly complicated Rube Goldberg thing, if they set off the mousetrap a little early, it'll like catch the ball that's gonna set everything else off, and everything else will miss time, and they will be cut free, but not killed.
Killed.
Which is so huge.
Yeah, I mean, it's the important part of the plan, is that they don't die. but it works, and then Basil, like, grabs Dawson out of the way of, I think, the axe?
Yeah, that sounds
catches Olivia. Both Dawson and Olivia are, like, losing their minds, and Basil's like, remember to smile for the camera.
The sad part is, spoilers, Rattigan will die without ever seeing that picture.
Oh, that's true.
Because, like, that's what I thought when I saw that, where I was like, the biggest fuck you would be Rattigan seeing this picture.
Right? Well, I mean, the second biggest. I think there is a bigger one, which is killing him.
Potato, potato.
The separation of his soul from his body. So the plan. This was the plan. They replaced the Queen's guard with Rattigan's goons. Rattigan would replace the Queen with a robot version of the Queen controlled by Flaversham.
Now, I do want to mention this right now, because I kind of mentioned it a little earlier. The robot version of the Queen looks like a robot Queen.
Yes.
She does not move gracefully like that toy ballerina that Flaversham made earlier.
Nope.
She's like, I decree that Rattigan's the best. Like, okay, Queen.
Sure. The Queen declares Rattigan her royal consort.
Uh-huh. Which, gross.
And that's it. And now Rattigan's in control of all of mousedom.
The Queen is carried off to be killed by Fidget.
To be fed to the cat.
Yeah. Fidget, my man, you gotta unionize or something. Fucking Rattigan, as Fidget is doing this, is like, I'm gonna start taxing the crippled. And like, fuck you, Rattigan. Like,
right? I know.
This is the hardest working guy you've got.
And also the elderly. In the middle of this, an elderly man who has a broken leg is like, you can't do this to us. And Radigan's like, oh, can't I? And then starts hitting him with his own crutch.
It's excellent. It's very good. But I was like, the implications of this, man. How dare you?
It's crazy. And then at one point, a kid is like booing Radigan. And his mom's like, no, honey. Politics have changed.
I mean, yeah, this very large mouse who's planning on killing us needs to not see you right now.
And also, the thousands of us here who don't like this, I just have to live with it because, you know, monarchy is absolute.
So, okay, if we're gonna get into it, then yes, we should probably mention that feeding the queen to a cat is considerably less evil than many of the things that Radigan has done recently, like kidnapping or killing his own henchmen or
killing widows and orphans.
Like, way less evil, because at the end of it, if he's taken down, then there's no longer a queen.
And that's good.
Short term, that's not going to be, like, amazing, because there's going to be a lot of chaos, but long term, it might be all right.
Like, well, do they not have a mouse parliament?
I don't know. It doesn't seem like it. This does not seem like a constitutional monarchy. The queen's consort, is suddenly making demands.
It's crazy. Now, thankfully, the queen is saved by Toby, and Basil and Dawson chase off Fidget. Toby chases this cat into the royal dog pen, and this cat dies.
Yeah, the cat, almost certainly, right? We just hear cat screams.
So that's one death. That's two deaths. My bad. I forgot about Bartholomew, the mouse henchman who the cat ate.
Pour some out.
So we're on death count number two in our children's movie. Then they free Mr. Flaversham from his captors, tie them all up, and then Basil takes over the queen's, like, robot and immediately starts dunking on Radigan.
Amazing. And Radigan doesn't know what's happening, but he's so fucking mad about it.
In a terrifying scene also, like, decostumes the robot. So by the end, just, like, eyes, teeth, and a hand are, like, pointing at Radigan.
Personally, I thought that felt like he was overplaying his hand a little bit.
Well, yeah, because they fucking kidnap Olivia again.
Poor Olivia.
They kidnap Olivia again. Radigan and Fidget run off to his little dirigible. Basil and Mr. Flaversham and Dawson get some balloons and make, like, a makeshift hot air balloon.
Yep.
And, or helium balloon.
Yeah, I guess it's a helium balloon. But it's working. They're catching up. They use a Union Jack to hold them all together.
I love the animation for this, like, makeshift balloon chasing after his bespoke dirigible, where they're just, like, flying all over the place, but slowly catching up. Fidget's like, we have to lighten the load. We're not going to get away.
And he goes to
throw Olivia overboard, which is the smart thing to do.
I mean, to be fair, she's probably not that heavy.
That's true. I mean, he is probably not that heavy. They're the same size.
Really, there should not be a question of throwing either of them overboard. But
if you're evil and your best henchman, without whom none of this would have gone right.
Right.
And sure, none of it would have gone wrong either. But let's stick to the pros here. Is like, if you throw this little girl overboard, we're free and clear. And we get to try again. But Radigan's lost the plot. He throws Fidget overboard into the river. And Fidget's a bat who can't fly or walk very well. Now, he's dead.
Fidget says he can't fly. I maintain that there is a decent chance Fidget's alive. I think a bat with one wing is not going to take fall damage.
In a polluted river?
He essentially lives in that polluted river.
He's going to drown.
He might drown. Maybe. No crime.
You die from that.
No, we can't
do that. Because then the only death that matters is Bartholomew's.
Well, the cat died.
We don't know that.
She was screaming.
No body.
I just think if there was a sequel, they probably could have brought back
Fidget,
but they would not have brought back the cat.
Well, you could bring back Radigan easily.
Yeah, because he fall dies too.
He gets a full Disney death. This is, I think, the only one that I'm like, oh yeah, this is it.
Disney's pretty good about not bringing back villains who fall off of stuff. Heroes who fall off of stuff, though. Fair game.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Unless you're Mufasa.
If you're a general in the Chinese army, you got something that Mufasa doesn't.
A horse.
A horse that loves you.
A horse that loves you. If Mufasa had a horse, he wouldn't have died.
It would have been fine. he could have just held on a little longer.
Yes, our third death. Then they crash into Big Ben. I think Basil jumps onto his ship, and then they crash into Big Ben. And so Basil, Olivia, and Radigan are all in the gears of Big Ben.
I love this. The animation in this is amazing.
It's so good.
But also, they do a thing that like you cannot do in computer animation. That I love it every time I see it in a movie, where like they put a real orange light behind the cells.
Yes.
And it looks so good. It's haunting. It's
such a good effect. So this is the scene where Radigan does something that I find very cool, and it's why I would like the rat thing to have been played into a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because this is the scene where it feels like Freudian. Like, he has created a whole persona to cover up the idea that he's a rat. Because in this scene, he goes full rat, and it's like watching somebody turn into a werewolf.
He goes feral.
He's like growling and tearing off his clothes, and just like he's going to kill and maybe eat Basil. Like,
no soup, only herbs. He is gonna kill this man. It's awesome. It's so good. So Basil saves Olivia, gets absolutely like knocked about by Radigan.
Yep.
But in the middle of the fight, manages to like pull both of them off of the clock hand, and they like fall to nothing, and everyone's sad because you know Basil died
for like a second.
For like 2 seconds. Sorry, holy shit, I am on the Disney fandom wiki.
Cool. Yes,
I'm gonna read this to you. The best Disney wiki, by the way, sorting characters into good or evil.
I maintain that the triplets are neutral, but continue.
As the two arch enemies fall from the tower, Radigan plummets to his well-deserved death.
Damn!
But Basil saves his own life with the propeller he had held onto to propel himself back up. Now, there's a little editorializing going on here.
I noticed.
Well-deserved.
The thing that I feel like we didn't mention, but I want to mention because it's kind of cool, is that Basil's whole plan is for them to be on the clock face when it strikes 10.
Yeah.
Because then the vibrations from the bell knock them off, which is cool.
It's very fun. And he shakes the little bell in his face to let him know.
Which honestly was confusing to me for a second, because I was like, his cat's not here. What does he think is going to happen?
Yeah, I also was like, well, I don't know. Toby's not just going to come out of nowhere.
Right? But it worked pretty well. Basil has like the broken part of the dirigible that would be used for like turning, probably. Yeah. Like maneuvering.
Yeah, it's like a rudder, but also like it's attached to like a little fan to push it forward.
Yeah, so he kind of uses it like a helicopter, which I actually think does pass the squint test. If you're that small, that would probably work.
Yeah, I think so. I love that he is pedaling for his life. He's not having a day of it. He is like huffing and puffing and looking like shit, and I think that kind of adds to it for me.
I feel like I've mentioned this many times before in this episode, but what I like about Basil is that none of this has been easy for him. Like, you see him having trouble with this stuff, and yeah, one of the things he's having trouble with is he's not, you could do this in a way where he's like pedaling like, oh hi everybody, like I survived, but no, he's like
like desperately reaching out to Dawson, like please.
please don't let me die.
and that's it. They get honored by the queen. I like fucked my mic, sorry.
You were talking about Basil Rathbone, right?
Yeah.
He voices Sherlock Holmes in this movie.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. They got like a vintage like recording of one of his films, right?
Yeah, his voice is taken from the Redheaded League.
Notably, they didn't use a recording for Watson for the human Watson, I believe, because the actor passed away recently.
Oh man, a time in fucking Hollywood where they would care if an actor had recently died.
Right? Yeah, it's crazy that the. That they like were like, well, we can't just use this guy's voice because he's passed away.
Yeah.
Surely we wouldn't create a CGI puppet of him to just kind of move around in a parody of life.
Surely not. This has been like a day, right? Like, fuck.
Yeah. And so they get honored by the queen. They go home. Olivia and her dad are like, well, we're going back to Scotland. Fuck this.
Goodbye forever, everyone.
And Olivia's like, oh, I'll always miss you, Mr. Basil of Baker Street. How was that? Did that sound at all like a child? I am not young enough to try, but I tried. And they leave, and Basil's pretty broken up about it.
For him, for sure.
Right.
He's like surprised.
Yeah, he doesn't. He's like upset that he's upset.
Yeah.
And then my man, Dr. Dawson, is like, well, I guess I gotta go find a house now.
And Basil's like, oh.
Oh, you're also leaving?
Oh, okay.
This is, and I mean this with like the most respect. This is the most gay-coded interaction that he has in this entire movie.
I mean, because he's like... He has to, like, awkwardly ask this man to live with him.
Hey, what if... And he doesn't, because this lady mouse bursts in crying, like, oh, I need help.
And then he sort of, like, sideways gets in there and is like, let me present Dr. Dawson, who helps me on all of my cases. And then Dawson's like, oh, and they like shake hands while she's like standing there crying,
funny, yeah.
Like, she does not notice this interaction, which is the best case scenario for sure.
She's in the middle of a tragedy.
Otherwise she'd be like
Sorry, I just dropped an image of this scene.
I got it.
God bless the wiki. They just have this.
Because otherwise she'd be like, did you two just meet? Excuse, I know my husband's missing, but let's talk about this.
Yeah, yeah. Are you got like, what's going on here? Just two bachelors deciding to move in together.
Let me get a spoon and we can dish.
And then the movie ends, you know, and Dawson's like, we went on like a million other super cool adventures.
You'll never see them.
Yeah, we'll never make a sequel to this movie, which is insane.
That's kind of wild, right?
It lends itself to it.
This is episodic, that's the point.
Now, I get it. How do you top Rattigan, the world's greatest criminal mind?
Yeah, and also, like, Olivia wouldn't be in it unless you, like, got him another child sidekick.
Dog, he has the Baker Street Irregulars, right? Get an actual orphan in there.
That'd be cool if we could get the Baker Street Irregulars. There's something there.
Send them to America.
Why?
Why not? I'm just saying, there's like a million things you could do. Hell, they could go to another city in Britain, and for a mouse, that's
crazy. A big deal.
That's a big deal.
You say that. Dawson's been to Afghanistan.
Dawson's been to Afghanistan. Hold on, I need to Google something. Why were British people in Afghanistan? I gotta remember how to spell Afghanistan. Oh, I'm so grateful for Google AI, because it just says here, bad reason. All right. I'm so glad that my keyboard's so loud. Otherwise, that bit wouldn't work. I love this movie.
Yeah, it's like very good.
It fucking hits, with the exception of those 5 seconds of pretty intense racism.
Oh, the second Anglo-Afghan War. I did find it.
Oh, I wasn't actually looking.
I just clicked through to Dr. Watson. Oh, apparently it was essentially a Cold War between Britain and Russia at the time.
Oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Prior they to called World it War I. The Great Game, which is a terrible thing to call a series of wars, but also kind of cool.
The Great Game. I can see the like 1800s newspaper cartoon about this. That's just like the king, the czar, and the king of, and the queen of Britain playing chess over Afghanistan.
God, oh, they loved imperialism in the 1800s. They were so into it.
They were so into it.
Oh, amazing. God, history sucks. The Great Game. Astounding. At least calling it a Cold War makes it sound like you a little bit don't want to do it. Yeah, this movie's, like, really solid. Like, it's weird that this isn't a better remembered Disney movie. And I think the only reason it's not is because it essentially came out just before Little Mermaid.
Yeah, and that's, I get it. The Little Mermaid is top tier, one of my favorite movies. But this movie fucking hits. It's so good. It's also an hour and 13 minutes long, and so much happens. It's so svelte. And it could have been shorter.
It could have been shorter because there's a whole bar scene that does not need to be there.
Yeah, you could cut a solid 5 minutes out of it and make it, like, even tighter.
To be fair, and I want to be clear about this, because I've talked down about the bar scene. The bar scene is fun. Everything that happens in the bar is really silly and fun to watch. It's just so weird that it's in this movie.
It's so ancillary to the plot, it's almost comical.
Yeah.
But, you know.
And it's such a good-looking movie. I remember when we made good-looking movies, just, like, for fun and for money, mostly.
The love in all of the backgrounds of this movie to not only make them look like filled with shit, like there's a lot of clutter in this movie, but to also like have a combination of like bespoke mouse furniture and mouse furniture that is clearly something human that has been repurposed into mouse stuff. Like they don't spend any time on it. Right? Like, they truly just are like, yeah, mice live with humans, who gives a shit? But the fact that they put it in the backgrounds is so good.
It's so excellent. I did just find out about the term Tournament of Shadows, which I do wish we brought back to talk about wars. Because that's the other thing they called the Great Game. I'm not talking about this, but...
Oh my god, there's a book about this.
There's probably a million books about this. Anyway, this was a bad thing that happened that has awesome phrases associated with it.
We are not here to condone the era of colonization. We are just here to say that the nouns attached to it are really cool sounding.
They came up with good words for it. That's probably why it lasted so long.
I have not read a single fantasy book that had anything as cool as Tournament of Shadows in it.
Tournament of Shadows? That's going to my next fantasy book. Are you kidding?
Yeah, right? The original Great Game.
But anyway, this is a movie about a mouse that's also a detective, and it's fucking good.
It's so good.
Thank you for listening to Direct-to-Video.
VHS.
I have been your host, Tony Robusto.
I have been your host, Andy Reyes.
You can find me at Blue Sky and inspiredbytrueevents.org and at my website of the same name.
You can find me at Blue Sky at royalty-valens because the underscore was not allowed. And you can also find me on YouTube at Ethical Games Journalism, where I am going to be wrapping up a Let's Play of Bioshock. And then probably getting back to the Project Revolution before the end of February. I still haven't unpacked my Wii.
You have any hot takes about Bioshock?
I mean, I have a lot of hot takes about Bioshock, which is part of the reason why I'm playing it. Because, like, it's such a weird era product of its time. It is a game that the only character that is fleshed out is, like, the bad guy. And so by the end of it, can't help but be like, isn't the bad guy so cool and correct? But isn't he so cool and right, though? And it's like, yeah, I don't know about that game.
Thank you to Scott Buckley for Homeward.
And what are we watching next time?
Fuck me. It's a fucking other mouse movie, right?
No.
Fuck.
I'm looking at the spreadsheet and I have organized it in such a way that we have decided to watch just a cavalcade of animal movies.
Great.
But we are watching Robin Hood.
Right. Guess who full on forgot we were watching Robin Hood?
Robin Hood was a movie that I watched at the dentist as a kid every time I went to the dentist.
The dentist just had one kid's movie, huh?
I would ask them to put it on.
Amazing.
I'd be like, can you put on Robin Hood? And they would, and I'd just watch like bits, like I would just watch Robin Hood and then go to the dentist and be happy.
All right, you know? Well, if it works, it works.
Yeah, it's like the ozone of kids' movies. Is that laughing gas?
I don't think so. I got what you were saying, but I'm actually pretty sure it's not.
Nitrous oxide.
Nitrous oxide, yeah.
It's like the nitrous oxide of kids' movies.
Anyway. Oh no, I realized that I was overly laughing at the joke like it was the first time I heard it, and then I realized I was laughing gas, so it could make... Damn it.
Yeah. Oh,
damn. Piss.
I thought you were really going for something there.
Piss. Piss! I want to cut out when I said piss three times, because now I think that was overplaying it.
You're turning into
rat again.
You're turning into your rat self.
I am the ghost of John Smith.
And I am on the case. Yesterday, we went to the Comic-Con that was happening here.
Okay, cool.
It was really nice. My friends got us tickets. They wanted to go see Elijah Wood and Sean Astin, who were there.
That's so funny. I just rewatched Lord of the Rings. I'll tell you what, their performances hold up.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good flick. I have no lost love in my heart for Lord of the Rings, but I desperately wished I could have asked Sean Astin about Balto 3 Wings of Change. Like,
there's no way he remembers Balto 3 Wings of Change.
There's no way he remembers. There's no way he remembers. He did Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, and then a year later, Balto 3 Wings of Change, right? Like, there's no way he remembers.
So, like, you were in the movie that won the Oscar for Best Picture, and then you were in Balto 3 Wings of Change. Can you tell me about that?
How did that feel? What was that like? Why have you not done an animated film since?